there's two types of Australians. That's all there is, two types. One that lives on the Gold Coast, and the other wish they live here.
What kind of work do you actually do in behind the scenes that people don't see?
I put it down to...
Tom Tate is the long-serving mayor of the Gold Coast and a former engineer turned tourism entrepreneur.
Since 2012, he's led bold reforms and major projects to drive innovation, growth and sustainability across the city.
I'm interested in these tiny homes, the smaller tiny homes, because if we can do that in smaller block, like 250 square metre block, well, you've got a chance to save up and move in, and especially a first home buyer and all that.
What's your view on how the city's progressed?
Okay. I look at this,
what is your long-term vision for the Gold Coast in the next, say, 10 to 15 years? Like, what do you actually want this city to be known for on a global stage?
For me, okay.
Welcome to another episode of the Unemployable Podcast. Today on the show, we have someone who truly needs no introduction. If you live on the Gold Coast, but we're going to give him one anyway. He's the longest serving mayor in the city's history. He's been elected since 2012 and as an independent, which was quite interesting. A man who's seen the Gold Coast grow from a tourist hotspot to Australia's fastest growing urban center now. With a background in civil engineering and hospitality, he's worn many hats, businessman, investor, and now mayor. Love him or challenge him, he's never too shy on a big idea. And today, we get to hear his unfiltered take on the future of our city here on the Gold Coast. I'd like to please give a warm welcome to Mayor Tom Tate.
Thank you very much, Eric. And wonderful to be able to come and share some of the thoughts. And I think let's have some fun.
Yeah, it's great. It's funny because we had this booked a little while back. And I then got invited by a colleague to this mayor's luncheon this afternoon that starts at 12 o'clock. And I'm like, but he's booked at 11 o'clock. And I was like, to our CEO, I think you need to double check because I think maybe he's been double booked. So we're actually going to the same place after this. So yeah, appreciate you. Obviously, I know you'd have a very busy schedule being the mayor and a lot of attention at the moment. So, I mean, a lot of people know you as the face of the city, right? But not everyone knows your actual story. And I did a little bit of research. So can you take us back to the early days, I guess, what shaped you to then become, in this public role?
We, as a family, I mean, I started my own business and in construction. My father had a hotel in Service Paradise and needed some refurbishment work. And I came up and did the job and project managed it and all that sort of stuff. And we got on really well. And he said, well, I'm his only son. He goes, why don't we just come together? And I went, oh, Dad, it's pretty hard because I speak my mind, I do my own thing, and you're the same. I guess that's it's going to be difficult. And the dad said, no, it's if we work together, what the deal is that we have a right to veto each other's decisions so that we can make sure that the best ideas goes ahead. And from there, we acquire other property together. And we're one of the first to start. We started Title Hotels. And what that means is that we didn't have to build a building. At the time, hotels were suffering. There was pilot strikes and you can buy a hotel half the price of what they're worth. And what we did there was we put kitchenettes into the rooms and then strata it as, we call it bachelor units. Mm. So that being a bachelor, you only need a bed, you need a microwave and a place to do your work and a car park and what more do you need? And and price-wise, it went off. We sold it very quickly. So And then we sold the management rights out of it, and then we bought other ones. So that's how we started, and we kept a couple of big resorts, and from there, I put gaming in, poker machines, all those sort of stuff. As time goes by, Dad wanted to retire, so I bought him out, and then I was the president of Chamber of Commerce Industry Queensland. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of issues at council that all the presidents in Southeast Queensland didn't agree with. I won't get into details, but put this way, I called the meeting. We did a strategy, we cost it, and we went, and we presented to the mayor and the CEO. 3 months later, I rang up, followed up, I said, oh, how'd you go with our ideas? And they basically shelved it. And I thought, well, hang on, that's really not really, it should at least give us reason why you're not going to do some things. Mm. So I got back home and I said to my wife, I said, I'm looking like I'm going to go into politics. And she said, oh, what motivates you? I said, well, I want to get in there, do a term, shake it up, be a disruptor. And I love my city. And get the city moving, and because the planning and there was two cranes in the sky, both of them at Griffiths University, and what really broke us was I had a development application in 3-story walk up, 12 units in Labrador, took over 12 months to get approved, and only got approved because I went in there and then they know who I was and. It got approved pretty quickly, and I think that's just wrong. Mm. So from there, and I said, and the other thing I said, look, we've been blessed with our investment, and really, it's if we make another, like you guys, you'll make another 10 million. They're not going to make a difference of what how you eat and your family's strong, the way you dress is not going to change, and maybe you change the car you drive. That's about it. And so I said, well, that's what I want to do. And she goes, I think you probably want to go for the mayoralty. I said, how'd you guess? So I said, oh, matter of fact, this is something I prepared earlier. So I walked over and it was a CD. Being in Australian politics, you got to have a jingle. So I put that on, turn it on. And he says, it's time for Tom. The thing goes, and we were laughing and all that. And she goes, you got to get the missus to laugh. And once you got her to laugh, she'll come along. Because I wouldn't do it without her blessing.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You got to make sure that whatever decisions we make, right, your partner has to be aligned with it. Because if not, you can go backwards really, really quickly. Or you might make different decisions. What does a typical day look like for a mayor? For people that don't know, obviously they see you in the newspapers, they see you in interviews, but what kind of work do you actually do in behind the scenes that people don't see?
I put it down to, I used to make deals for myself, and now I'm a deal maker for the Gold Coast. And people got ideas, they come and see me, and I give them my thoughts process as well. And that's how you expand your economy. So the process is that you absolutely want to help people's entrepreneurial have a go spirit so that they become unemployable. And then the second part is you're the major advocacy, you're the cheerleader, promoter for the city. Mm. And all the other operational is the CEO, roads, rates and rubbish. Yeah, I do the budget, then I pass it over to him. But for creating more events for the city, broadening our economy, work out what else we can do, and really, that's how you lead. And you lead taking the rest of the councillors on the journey with you, with your vision. And of course, you... take the people of the Gold Coast on a journey with you. You're not going to please everyone. But in your heart, if you believe what you're doing is the best for the city,
yeah,
you have a good crack at it. So that's really the summary of what my job is.
It's well said, and I take my hat off to you, because I've been here since 2007, originally from Canada, and you know, you've been re-elected multiple times, and you've been here since 2012 as mayor, and now we're sitting here in 2025, and you've got a few more years, and who knows where else, right, it can take you. And I just want to take my hat off to you, because the Gold Coast, you know, since you've been in as mayor, to me, has progressed into an amazing city to live in. I think it's one of the best places in the world, to be honest with you. It's attracting a lot of people, not just from interstate, but also international. And for us, you know, Gold Coasters that now live here and call it home, wherever you're from, you know, and we're trying to create more business, and specifically in this podcast, you know, it's built around property development. And I know that you've been an avid property developer over the years as well. So I thought it would be, you know, we thought it'd be amazing to have you on. And it was actually Carson, I think, that reached out. These two are in a bit of a competition to see who they can actually better each other on getting people on the pod and getting meetings with. Because now they're becoming such, large scale developers, really. They're really meeting a lot of different people, right? They're dealing with the MPs and local councils of the different areas. And it's very, very important. So you won this one, Carson, I think.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's funny, when you meet people from the Gold Coast, most people you meet aren't from the Gold Coast. And it's always had this kind of boom bust thing. And you talk from people from down south or from interstate. And I've been here since about 2007. I was in Byron Bay, then, you know, found my way up here for more work opportunities. And how have you seen the city evolve from, you know, just a holiday destination, if you like, to probably, in my eyes, it's matured as a city, and there's more opportunities. There's obviously a lot of investments coming here, especially post COVID. What's your outlook, or what's your view on how the city's progressed? Okay.
I look at this, right? I mean, things just doesn't happen, you know, and the plan was all about broadening our economy, because we were very strong in tourism and construction, and they are cyclical economy. And with that, if the tourism's down and construction's down at the same time, the Gold Coast is devastated. And what I mean by that is the small business owners are the ones that the cafe, the restaurants and all that, well, they've got no customers. And then the snowballing part is that, you know, the money is not there, unemployment increases, and then really, if you haven't got a job, it doesn't matter, you can have a beautiful beach, but the lifestyle sucks because you got no money. So my point there is that in 2012, I said that that we want to broaden our economy, and people go, oh yeah, easy to say, hard to do. Absolutely, but I'll take you down of how we did it very, very quickly. First up, you gotta get rid of the red tape to create certainty. Let's say, as you bought a block of land, you know that you will get an approval or a quick no if it's not, you know, if what you're trying to do is not in the code, and you want to go, no, you can't do that, go and redo your homework, or you get an approval quicker. So what that means is that it gives you certainty that, you know, it's going to happen. And from there, it gives you confidence. You go, well, you know, I bought that, and the mayor says you're going to get your DA if you do it this way. And with certainty come confidence. With confidence comes investment, because you go knock on the door and the bank said, I've got my DA, I've got some pre-sales, you're really pumped. And the bank will go, well, okay. They're always the last one to smile, and they give you the money, right? And so with investment comes jobs. This is where you got to bring the jobs back. And with jobs, right, that improves the lifestyle. That's how your economy goes. So that part of it, you apply that to other sector of the economy, and basically our education and medical research, if you add the two together, is the biggest economy we have now, bigger than construction and tourism combined. And the film industry in the last 5-6 years it's really boom. I have to say though, the COVID factor helped us. Everyone else in the world closed down, but we didn't. We said, the film crew, if you stay together in a bubble and you do all your filming and all that and don't intermingle with everyone, you can fly in and off you go. But one flew out. I remember Elvis there, Tom Hanks, he flew out to the Oscar.
Yeah.
And he got COVID over there. There's always someone that does something different. But now the IT economy is growing at our Health and Knowledge Precinct. You've got people, I'll give you two examples. You've got brain surgeons with robotics, and we've got very good brain surgery here, but there could be someone specialized in the frontal lobe, for instance, and he's in New York. Well, he can have his sensor and his glove in there and moving his hands, actually moving the robotics, working together with a guy here doing brain surgery right there at our Health and Knowledge Precinct. The next part will be the genome. And what I mean by that is that I've already met with the company. They're setting a platform, you know, to find vaccine and testing and all that can take you 10, 15 years. What they've done is down to genomics level, let's say the skin has a switch there that causes aging. It's just natural, right? So they can go in and switch that off so it doesn't age. And using your cell, send it back in so that it's no rejection, and that cell start taking over from other skin cell because it's not going to age, right? And the aged one dies away. So they've got the ability to actually stop your skin from aging. So I said, what about ligaments? Because I do weights, and yeah, that's the part you wear out. He goes, well, we can do the same thing, same platform, same scenario, and we can stop the ligament from aging as well. So what about this? What about other things? So that's, I think, in the next 3 years, it's that quick. You will see them set up here, have a building here, and you'll see it going to commercialization, and that's gonna change the landscape of the Health and Knowledge Precinct.
Yeah, I always see the Gold Coast, and I'm like, we need to, in my opinion, I've always been a big believer that we need to attract more business, right? Rather than going to Brisbane and going to Sydney and going to Melbourne, you know, how do we attract more and more of these bigger businesses? I was in a meeting last week which is something I actually off camera at a separate time want to discuss with you, because there's these couple guys that are doing some amazing things, and what they're doing in London, in England, in Dubai with the same type of model, and the people it's attracting like some of the top entrepreneurs and investment in the world. And I think it's ripe for the Gold Coast, because one thing money can't buy is the lifestyle and the weather of the Gold Coast. Doesn't, you know, not that I can see of anyways, right? You could buy nice cars, you could buy beautiful homes, you could buy whatever you want, you could buy people, but you can't buy this location, the weather. And this is what really attracts a lot of people here. But at the same time, I look at it, and as much as it attracts great people, it also attracts a little bit of laziness, I think, because of the lifestyle and because you could just go for a surf. And, you know, so I think what we need to do is up the game a little bit more, because I think there's so much opportunity in this small little place here. What is your long-term vision for the Gold Coast in the next, say, 10 to 15 years? Like, what do you actually want the city to be known for on a global stage when people think the Gold Coast? Because the reality is this, a lot of people around the world have no idea what the Gold Coast actually is. They know Sydney, they've heard of Melbourne, some of them know Brisbane, but when I say I'm from the Gold Coast, they're like, where's that? So say in 10 to 15 years, if you were to ask every single person around the world, hey, where do you live? I live on the Gold Coast. And they know the Gold Coast, right? Like Sydney's known for, you know, financial capital, Sydney Opera House. They got the bridge. What are we going to be known for here in your vision?
Okay. For me, okay, I'll go back to about broadening our economy. So in 10, let's take it all the way to 2035. Because we're co-hosting the Olympic and Paralympics in 2032. A lot of sports going to be on the Gold Coast because we did the Commonwealth Games in 2018, so we're games ready.
Yep.
And so that adds to that we're going to be on the world stage. And the world will see the Gold Coast of what we are because beach volleyball, well, where are you going to have it? On the beach. You're not going to have it on the Brisbane River, obviously. So you're going to get all those imagery going out. And what the message will be sent there is that the first message I want to send is that the biggest asset we have in the Gold Coast is its people. We're friendly. Yes, we might be a bit slower in doing deals and we're not hustle and bustle, but we just relax. And the second point is it's a city of opportunity because doesn't matter what sector of your economy you're in, you might even be in crypto and other new AI and quantum computing. We're going to have it here. We're going to, my view is that all those new economy, we're going to be as advanced as the US because I got to brain drain them to come over here. If I can get them to come here, you know, it's a bit like that song, Hotel California, you can check in anytime you like, but you can't ever leave.
Correct.
The Gold Coast is a bit like that. You come and you go, maybe you leave, but you come back again and pretty soon you go, why the hell would I want to leave here if I can portable my IP and do what I do best and reshape the city to suit me? So the my final word is that it's a land opportunity with flexibility for you to really boom.
Yeah.
And if you've got that mindset of, well, I can invent this. I can, you know, if you're always thinking of doing something, it's the place that you will survive well because majority of people here has come from somewhere. 30% of Gold Coasters are born overseas, somewhere else. I was born overseas. But when you get around, it still has that 700,000 people. But when you go to functions, it still has that regional country feel that, oh, Bob's over there. I'll just go and see how's he going with his research. You know, maybe there's, maybe I can invest in it. And that's the sort of environment. And that's how I see that the people are our biggest asset.
Yeah.
And yes, you got your beach, you got the Mount Tambourine and all that. That's the backdrop. But what happens is that the creative juice, we bounce off each other. And we all know we punch above our weight comparison to other cities.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period. And with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You can get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au
/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
And even when I'm in Melbourne making a speech promoting the Gold Coast, I always end up with going, remember this, there's two types of Australians. That's all there is, two types. One that lives on the Gold Coast and the other wish they live here. And what happens? A lot of Melbourne people are moving up.
Yeah, it's so true. Like I think what's happened, like what happened during COVID was quite interesting because, you know, we talked to a lot of people and you think that people from Sydney and Melbourne come to the Gold Coast all the time, but that's not the case, right? Like I know so many people that didn't come to the Gold Coast for 10 years prior to COVID. Why? They go other places. They go to the US. They go to Europe. That's where they spend their money on their family trips. But during COVID, it forced people, right, to come to the Gold Coast from Sydney and Melbourne. Where are we going to go? Well, we can't go anywhere, right? Where's the next best spot? Let's go to the Gold Coast. And for someone that came to the Gold Coast in 2007 or 2012 and then came to the Gold Coast in 2021 or 2022, a lot has changed. And I agree with you in regards to getting those eyeballs because we got a lot of those eyeballs during COVID from Sydney and Melbourne. And where did they come? Where did they buy? Right? The population grew, interstate migration, property investment, development, right? A lot of developers coming here now as well. And I agree with you that in 2032, Commonwealth Games was great, don't get me wrong, but it's not the Olympics, right? The Olympics is going to be the biggest stage I think that the Gold Coast has ever seen. And the amount of people that will come here and enjoy it, like you said, hopefully they do come back and some of them, you know, never leave. How does the new city plan? I want to dig a little bit now more into the property and the development side because we're property developers ourselves as well. And a lot of the audience that will be listening to this is as well. How does the new city plan align with that vision that you just mentioned? And what is it? What does it mean for developers and opportunists and entrepreneurs?
Yeah. I'll just go back. When I first came in 2012 to do the new city plan back then, and of course the town planner, the kingpin, and I said, oh, it's a little bit different here. And they said, I've got all the directors in. And I said, it's a bit like this. I'm a civil engineer. So what we do is we'll plan all our infrastructure and civil works first, right? So all the town planners can leave, the engineer stays. So we plan our transportation, where we can move people around. We plan the sewerage, we plan the future waste to energy, recycle water, all those infrastructure, parks, you know, and even community infrastructure, libraries, community halls. So we plan all that. Well, we need one over here, and then we look at the growth in the north and the south. And so the key part is public transport. Public transport is one that if you can get more people into public transport, there'll be less cars on the roads, less wear and tear, less traffic, and it's cheaper, more affordable. So that's then at the end of that, we did the transport plan, which is the main spine was the light rail, and it goes from Helensvale all the way to the airport in Coolangatta. It's a very large project, so we had to do it in stages, but it doesn't matter. Now we get the town planners in. They said, right, this is where people are going to move. We want to go up, not out, because it's cheaper. I mean, if you build a 200 apartment building, you got your plumbing stacks, you know, instead of spreading out of 200 homes, that's a lot more expensive to do infrastructure from the city point of view. So we're going up, and where do people want to live? Along the coastline. So the town plan then reassessed, and we made sure that we're going up instead of spreading, going out. And up north, yeah, with the light industrial, we can do housing estates there so that they don't have to travel too far to work in the light industrial. So strategically, we put that in place in 2012. where we go now is that the core of it hasn't changed. There'll be some other areas where we'll put a higher density, smaller lots. I'm interested in these tiny home to smaller tiny homes, because if we can do that in smaller block, like 250 square meter block, and the tiny homes nowadays, I've inspected some, two stories, it's got everything you need. And my attitude is, if you're a young fella in your late 20s and there's a house and land below 600,000, and your wife willing to work, well, you got a chance to save up and move in, and especially a first home buyer and all that. Otherwise, if we don't do that, you're going to look at 1.2, 1.3 million, right? Even an apartment. Well, that's double the price. That's out of the reach.
Yep.
So what happens there, they're renting. And that's not what the dream's all about. I've got four kids, so I can see what they're trying to do. And of course, there's that bit of bank of mum and dad to help, you know, because you want to give them a hand. I'd rather give with my kids with warm hands than cold hands.
Yeah.
You know, in 20 years, say I drop dead and there's in my will, there's money there for them to build a house. Too bloody late. They're already in their 50s.
Yeah.
They want help now.
And that's the thing, right? Like with the affordability at the moment, and it's funny you say you like those tiny homes, because a good friend of mine owns one of the largest ones on the Gold Coast.
Oh,
large manufacturing facility, and you know, they've got investment from Queensland government as well, you know, to solve those problems. Because I've literally had meetings with him and the bank, right, going, this is a no-brainer. Right, this is going to solve a lot of this affordability issues. But the issue at that time, where the banks aren't looking at it as a home, they're still looking at it as like plant and equipment, because they can't wrap their head around, you know, a block of land and then the house being built over here, and then you're putting it on a concrete slab. It's a different type of lending. But I think what happens is, once we start getting the banks to get an understanding of going, hey, no, this is a home. Right, it's just a very efficiently built home, and once you can go and go, mom, pa, or your son and daughter, or my son and my daughter, as an example, can go to the bank and get a 70 or an 80%, you know, residential LVR mortgage on it. That's when it'll really, really start to kick in place. So we need to solve that issue. Yeah.
And one more to that, there's technology now where even personally, I'm looking in to you build your core, let's say 12, 15 story building. You build your core, and like a Makana said, instead of tiny home, the apartment is it's built in the factory, trucks it in, lock it into the main core, and then you just lift it an X, and then less construction time. Right, make it affordable, prefab out there, you blink, 3 months, it's up. So that's the part that I'd like to investigate further, not just for the city, but I think if someone's doing that right, I would, you know, absolutely look into it myself. Yeah. Because
that's a challenge, isn't it? Because a lot of the towers at the moment, I think something like 30% of the DAs that are getting approved aren't getting built. And I know you've been on the record of saying, look, maybe we'll put a time limit on some of these people land banking and bits and pieces. But the reality is well, a lot of these horizons are just not stacking up from the feasibility point of view. And we talk about the more greedy developers, they're just going to do this and that. But a lot of them are just not getting their 20% to even get funding. And if you're happy with 20% for taking all that risk. So how do you see, like, you know, I think we're like 70%. Detached housing at the moment. And like you said, we were at a UDIA meeting recently, and they said, yeah, we want to switch it. The plan is to go to, you know, 70%, you know, units and attached housing. But there's obviously that challenge of the feasibility side of things. I do a little bit of acquisitions, and a lot of the directions from the developers is, I only want waterfront because we've got to sell them at such high rates to make them stack up. So I think obviously there's these new technologies that are going to help with a lot of that. So what do you see as a challenge? Because if I look at the city of the plan, and I'm a little bit biased because we do land particularly, but when I look at other councils, obviously we've got 600 square metres, that minimum lot size for low density residential, and you've got places like Brisbane where it's 400, for example. And then for the rural residential side of things, we've got an average of 8,000 and a minimum of 4. Whereas in, say, Moreton, you can do 3,000 square metres in for their rural residential acreage style product. We can still keep the koalas and the, you know, the ecological challenges, keep that in place, but we could create a lot more densities just by reducing that. And further to that, you know, are you looking at some options where you could put potentially some townhouses or a duplex on some of these lots? Obviously, we can't do a lot of these things. I mean, some of the corner blocks we can do bits and pieces, and there's a bit of infill happening, but do you see that changing in the future at all?
The new town plan will reflect that. I totally agree with you regarding if you've got a house there and you wanted it, and you want to add turning to townhouse, we're all for it, you know, especially corner block, you know. Geez, I'm looking around for corner block myself. But my point is that bringing down the lot size to 400, I don't have a problem with that at all. Matter of fact, with the 400, why can't you should be able to fit two townhouses in there. And so that'll be part of the the new town plan. And if we can't move quick enough, we'll highlight an area and talk to the Deputy Premier to say if I can do a temporary planning instrument so we can accelerate it further, because the town plan will take 12-18 months. Planning instrument, it's a bit like, mate, this is what I want to do, and it can accelerate that very quickly. So that's I hear you, and that's really okay. Put it this way, what are we here for if we're not going to help the next generation to realize their dream? You know, other people can come and invest and buy and make the money, and our kids is like they feel like the train has left the station and nobody cares.
Yeah, because we're landlocked, aren't we? We've got the border to the south, like you mentioned. We've got the, you know, all the ecological, you know, koalas and bits that we want to preserve, obviously, to the west, and then we start hitting cane fields to the north. So we're restricted, you know, in a sense, with what we can do. So I think, you know, you got the big developers, but there's a lot of mum dads that would love to do and will provide a lot of stock to the market if they can do, you know, put a little townhouse at the back. Or if another thing is with I know you went through one of Kevin Dooney's rooming houses.
Yep.
That's a, you know, obviously in Brisbane they don't charge the infrastructure charges. I know on the Gold Coast at the moment it's not feasible because we've only got 4 unrelated parties instead of 5 unrelated parties that we can actually have in the to rent out legally. And the other thing is we're getting charged, you know, significantly infrastructure charges per room. So all the investors go to Brisbane and they're building 5, you know, unrelated parties rooming houses. And as, you know, when you first hear about them, you're like, it doesn't work. But everyone's got their own self-contained areas. Yeah, and we've got an affordable issue.
It does work.
You know, so obviously we had the state government's done the granny flat scenario, which is obviously bringing some more affordable housing to it. But is that something that you'll look at in this new planning scheme potentially to, you know, allow that to happen?
Absolutely. I mean, if you can, and I inspect it, and the common area, you know, if you make it very nice, the lifestyle of living, it could be very, very, very good. Mm-hmm. And if it's the council infrastructure charges holding that up, we'll change it. And in 2013, when things wasn't moving, for the whole city, I said, if you were shovel ready, you get a discount of 100% on infrastructure charge. Well, the project, people go, I remember it rained for a month and somebody rang and goes, Tom, I've been trying to dig and get going to start so that we can get the infrastructure charge 100% discount. I said, and that was 6 months. And I said, can you make it 7 on the phone? I said, well, I'll do a mayor a minute. And we changed it to 7. And then after that 7 month was 50% discount. But it got the momentum going. And I mean, that's a massive way of getting the projects, getting the city moving again. Yeah. But for a specific style to help the younger people, I'm more than willing to put it to council regarding reduction of infrastructure charge.
Yeah, because I think that's the sticking point at this stage, because obviously we pay the infrastructure charges for the piece of dirt, but when you're getting charged per room, you know, I went to do one. You know, it's not just Gold Coast, it's scenic. We had a piece of dirt up there. We would love to build one. And when we're getting, I think it was $70,000 to build rooming house, going, oh, we'll just go to Brisbane and do it, you know. So that's the sticking point. I know you had big thoughts on the Airbnb side of things as well. How do you see that? Obviously it's a tourist town, and you've got, you know, hotels and motels that are paying a lot of money to have the rights to rent those out, and then obviously Airbnbs have been hugely popular. Do you see that? Where do you see the right balance, I suppose, and how would you like to see it work in the city?
I look from the fairness point of view. I mean, I own hotels, so I know the training and the investment in the, being a hotelier, and Airbnb doesn't have to do any of that. They join the organisation, and the marketing's done, and they get very good rental income. And so the hotel, you know, I mean, you know, it's not high. The market is, people can shift and go, bugger, we're going to Bali or somewhere else. And all of a sudden your occupancy rates that was sitting at 85% can drop down to 60. And then if it drops anymore, the break-even point is starting to get a bit nervy. And the bank will ask for revaluation, and then ask for you to top up. They love to say, can you top it up, please? Especially when you don't have any money. When things are going bad, they go, reval, can you put another mill in? I said, mate, the reason we're struggling, if anything, have you got another mill to give me?
Yeah.
But on a side issue, I met with the CEO of Airbnb. And I did say that the council rates will increase for Airbnb, but gradually, to make it a bit more even playing field. Not trying to rip them off, but if they're making $3,000 a week or $5,000 a week, well, I think you can. The different people going through there, there's a lot of wear and tear on the roads and curb, because you're moving people in and out. So the rates has been adjusted in this budget, but in any business, you don't whack it. You just got to take it slowly. Gold Coast is Airbnb is a great place to do. Look, occupancy is, I think we're full, you know, and that's why people will put in their house or whatever for Airbnb to help pay for their holidays.
Do you see the feasibility, back to my point, sorry, I didn't elaborate up probably enough, with the high rise side of things? Do you feel like there is a is there a way to get the stock that we actually need through high rise? Like, do you think like there's a solution? Because I know the state government's bringing in a feasibility side of what they're doing when they're putting out these targets, and this is how we're going to get there, because once again they weren't actually stacking up. So do you still see that as the solution for the Gold Coast, if so many projects aren't stacking up, unless we're selling $3 million units on the water? I mean, I know there's some projects going ahead, but not to the degree that we need housing to, you know, but it's...
The project that's going ahead right now along the eastern coast, it's not for first home buyers. They're all empty nesters, right? So there is a side effects there where somebody who owns a four bedder in Paradise Waters or there in a good area will sell, and they'll get $5 million for it. Okay. they come in there and they go, oh, this only need two bedders and a study maybe near the ocean. $3.5 million, you can get one. And a good one, right? So there's $1.5 million left that they can enjoy life a bit more or whatever. It works. So what happens to that home in the Paradise Waters? Well, another rich family who's going to move from Southport, say, oh, we want to be get into a better house now. So they'll move in, they'll buy the $5 million, borrow a bit more money, and they'll sell theirs for $3 million, right? And then somebody else who's owned a $2 million house, oh, that's a good house, I move to there. So gradually, but it doesn't go far enough to for the affordable kid who go, oh my God, $2 million house, I'd love to get that. Still out of their reach. But that's the domino effect, but it doesn't reach far enough. Doesn't quite answer your question. Can it get more stock? Yes, but the stock is not what we want. We'll have to go out to Southport, Labrador, out that way, and to get the to go the high rise and that near the light rail, so that the affordable units are not so far, so that they don't have to have a car, so they can get on a light rail and go to work in Brisbane if they need to, and get on their phone or whatever. Yeah, if it's an hour on public transport, they can still do their work, right? So that's what I. That's where I see it. If anyone else listening got a better idea to help me, I'm not a font of all knowledge. I would love to know additional idea. I already learned some already about the potentially relaxing the infrastructure, and I'll take that on board.
Mayor Tom Tate, thank you so much. We could be here for another hour easily talking about this, but I know that you got to run off to the mayor's lunch, which I've gotten invited to as well, but you got to get there more on time than I do because you're actually speaking. I'm just going to be listening and eating by the sounds of it. But it was great to have you on. It would be great to have you on again at some point. I know you have a busy schedule, but yeah, I think there's a lot of synergies in what we're doing. And you know, Unemployable Podcast is growing very heavily here on the Gold Coast. There's eyeballs all around the country watching us every week and internationally now too. And we'll just keep providing value and bringing better and better guests on. So for those of you guys that are watching this, if you enjoy this, please like, subscribe, and share it around, because it's not all the time that you can get the mayor of a city to come on a podcast like this. So we appreciate your support. We'll keep doing what we do. We'll keep promoting the Gold Coast, which is behind us and is, you know, in our logo there. And yeah, I just want to say thank you very much. And thank you, Carson, for getting this organized and getting Tom out here with us.
Thanks for coming on.
Oh, good. I'd love to come on, you know, let some time lapse. And yeah. And then we go, well, what have you done since we spoke?
Correct. Yeah, it's good to see the progress, because one thing we forget is where we once were, right? Like where the Gold Coast was. People easily forget where it was in 2007. We just see it today. And again, the next 10, 15, 20 years, it'll change again. And hopefully we're all here enjoying the fruits of our labor and what you've done for our economy in this Gold Coast and for the people of the Gold Coast.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
No worries. Thank you. Again, guys, thank you very much for your attention. We'll keep showing up every week, bringing on mayors, and obviously we got to bring on your boss now. I don't know who that is, but we'll see who that is.
Trump. Trump.
We'll get Trump. That's going to be our goal. Definitely. Tom Tate, set it for us. Let's get Donald Trump on. Thank you very much, and we'll see you on the next one. Thank you.
Hey there, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable.